There's a Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonasan have ka'ozlei ba'urcha. Rabbi Yonasan, and Rabbi Chanina were walking down the road. Matzu lahanhu trei shvili. They came to a fork in the road, and there were two paths that would lead them to their destination. Two ways they could have gone. Chad patzi apischa davoidus kaychavim. One of the roads passed by the entrance to a church, a house of idolatry. Al halacha is that you're not supposed to go past the door of a house of idolatry. You're supposed to give yourself dalet amos leeway at least, rather than go so close. So maybe take the other path. But the chad patzi, but the other path, one other path, opened up. It passed by a pischa de bezoinos on a beis vadlis nus. Now, which path should they take? Which place would they rather pass by? Omar lechad lechavre. One said to his friend, "Nezel a pischa de voidus kaychavim. Let's pass by the house of idolatry." Dinochis Yitzrei, because like the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Chazal slaughtered the Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah. So if there's no Yetzahara, then we may as well take the lesser of the two evils. And even though there's a halacha that you're not supposed to pass by a house of Avodah Zarah, but in this case, it would be the wise decision to do so. So Amalei Yidach. So the other one answered him, "No, Nezla pischa de bezoinos. Let's rather go on the path that passes by the beisvad liznus, the nachpe liyitzrin unakabel agra, and will resist ayetzahara and will get reward. Lefum tzara agra, the greater the nesoyin, the greater the reward. So why should we waste an opportunity to have a nesoyin? We'll have reward." Now, the Gemara says elsewhere that a person should under no circumstances bring himself to a nisayon. Yoylem al yikanes adam es atzmoi l'toich nisayon. And it's one of the things we're mispalel for every day in the morning. We don't get very far into davening when we say yehi ratzon shetatzileni lo lidei nisayon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please don't hand me over. It doesn't say, please don't hand me over to the Yetzirah, although it says that somewhere else. Here it says, please don't hand me over to a Nisayon, even if I pass the Nisayon. And Tosfos explains over here that the reason why this Man D'Yomar wanted to pass by the Beis Vadlis Nus was because of the severity of the prohibition of passing by a house of idolatry. It wasn't that he was running after Nisyonis, but rather he was expressing the silver lining in the cloud. He was expressing the Gamzu L'Toiva, so to speak, that you have to pass by the Beis Vadlis Nus over here, because you can't pass by the house of idolatry, because that's more Osir al pi halacha. And he's saying that at least, let's look at the bright side, over here we'll pass by the Beis Zoinis and we will get reward. But if the house of idolatry was not on the other road, then according to Tosfos, it's clear that nobody would have jumped to bring themselves to an Asoyan. And it's a very important principle, living as a Frum Yid, that although we only get reward by having Nisyonis, we try to stay far away from Nisyonis as much as possible. Classic example of this seeming paradox, that on one hand we get reward only for Nisyonis, on the other hand we try hard to stay away from them, is the way the Rambam describes a Baal Tshuva. Rambam, and it comes from a Gemara, says that tshuva gemura, the highest level of tshuva, complete level of tshuva, is not only when a person regrets what he did, resolves never to do it again, and confesses, says vidui, over what he's done, but he finds himself in the very same predicament again, the same predicament in which he was nichshol the first time, and the second time, he's not nichshol. The exact same circumstances are relived by him. The same woman, the same place, the same time, the same everything. Same circumstances, and the same level of nisoyan, and this time he resists. That's tshuva gemura. Shortly thereafter, the Rambam says that it's the derech of balei tshuva to run far away from the object that they were nichshol in. It says, run far away, stay far away from the thing that you were nichshol in. So which is it? You're supposed to run far away? Or are you supposed to do... How do you do tshuva gemura if you run far away? The answer is, you're supposed to run far away. And although tshuva gemura is only attainable if circumstances end up in such a way that you go through the same nisayin, but you're not supposed to design those circumstances. If Hashem makes those circumstances come, then fine, then you got tshuva gemura. But even though that's the only way to attain tshuva gemura, you're supposed to run away. Because we always run away from the sins. Could be. This is why, from all the mitzvahs in the Torah, we're mispalel and Shemar Nesrei only for one. Tshuva shleima. We're mispalel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should grant us tshuva shleima. Hachzireinu b'tshuva shleima lefanecha. And so on and so forth. Because tshuva shleima is the only mitzvah that we're not allowed to run after. Tshuva shleima, we're allowed to run after tefillin, we're allowed to run after tzitzis, we're supposed to. And according to some poskim, even if the mitzvah is in another town, you're supposed to run after it. But tshuva shleima, meaning tshuva gemura, you're not allowed to run after. Because the price to pay for tshuva gemura is that you put yourself in a nisoyin, and although there's a tremendous prize to be gained by it, we don't take risks. Better safe than sorry, where nisyonis are concerned. That's the halacha. Yehi ratzon, may it be the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shetatzileni lo lidei nisoyin. Follows, therefore, that not only is it imperative that we keep ourselves away from nisyonis, but we make sure we keep nisyonis away from our children as well. Sometimes parents think that it's good when their children experience nisyonis, and that's, truth to tell, the only way they can get reward. But sometimes parents think that they should purposely increase the nisyonis of their children, because this way the children will be able to get experience, and the children will be able to learn how to deal with the world. And truth to tell, another translation for nisyon is experience. Nevertheless, this is not the halacha. The halacha is that we're supposed to avoid nisyonis for ourselves and for others as well. We're not supposed to put people in nisyonis. An extreme example of putting somebody in a nisayon is this, that the Torah prohibits lifnei iver lo yisitein michshol. If you give a tray for hamburger to somebody knowing that he may eat it, you're giving him a nisayon, but it's an issur d'oraisa. Well, even if it's not an issur d'oraisa, we have to try very, very hard to keep our children away from nisyonis. As far as their experiences are concerned, believe me, whether we encourage it or not, our children will experience a slew of nisyonis. The Yetzirah does not need us to help him do his job. He's very good at it by himself. He will give our children all the nisyonis that they can handle. And the Satan does not need us to give him a helping hand. We should try to make the Yetzirah's job as difficult as possible. This evening we're going to learn about a particular type of nisoyan that parents often fail to recognize as a nisoyan, and when it comes down to protecting their children from it, they don't always understand that if their children have this experience, it creates tremendous temptations and tremendous Yetzirah. And parents know a house of idolatry, a base vadlaznus, a bad friend, whatever the case may be, that's an asoyin. But this evening we're going to learn about an asoyin that parents don't recognize as an asoyin. And before I give the examples, I have to give credit for most of the examples to the great Goyin and Tzaddik Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who in his Sichos Musar teaches us about this particular nesoyin. And that nesoyin is what we could call in English failure. Just like a bad friend is a nesoyin, it creates extra pressure on a child to do bad. Just like a bad experience in school, let's say a careless Rebbe that says the wrong thing at the wrong time and does the wrong thing, or says the wrong thing in the wrong time in the wrong place, that could create pressure on a child to do bad. Failure is no less of an asoyin than a bad friend or a tempting avera that's placed in front of him. Failure itself, nefila, yerida, failure creates an asoyin. For example, in Parshas Emor, there's a story about a machloikus that took place, a din Torah. It was something of a monetary dispute about rights, squatters' rights, camping rights, actually, between the son of a Jewish woman and an Egyptian man. Egyptian man was the man who Moshe, who killed the Yid and then took his wife. They had a child. This child had a machloikis with another man. This child wanted to camp among the people of Shevet Dan, because he believed that he was from Shevet Dan in this respect, although his father was an Egyptian. Moshe Rabbeinu paskened that he can't camp with Shevet Dan. Well, this man went, and he pronounced HaKadosh Baruch Hu's shame in the context of a klola. They brought him to Moshe Rabbeinu. They detained him until HaKadosh Baruch Hu explained what to do with him, and then they meted out his punishment. And the shaila is this. Here you have a man, a Jewish person, who wanted to camp with Shevet Dan. This wasn't a bad person. What he wanted wasn't bad. And suddenly, quickly, he committed a terrible, terrible avera. Now that's not normally the way people fall. People usually fall slowly. People slowly go down. And this man went down like that at the snap of a finger. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, because since he lost the Din Torah by Moshe Rabbeinu, since he was rejected, and he couldn't camp with the people in Shevet Dan, that failure, that rejection, created a Yetzirah within him that caused him to go from his Madrega quickly and severely downward, and caused him to do what he did. Another example is Cain and Hevel. Know what it says by Cain and Hevel? Targum Yoinus and Ben Uziel says that Cain told Hevel very strange things. Lezdin v'lezdayin. There is no justice and there is no judge. Les oylam acha. There is no oylam haba. Les lemeiten agar toiv l'tzadikaya. There is nobody to reward the tzadikim. V'les lemifra min rishiyayon. There's nobody to punish the evildoers. He was a kaifer beika. Now what caused him to do that? Kain HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him like a Navi. What caused this man suddenly to be a kaifer beika? Well, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says that this pasuk where the Targum is comes immediately after the Torah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted, paid attention to Hevel's carbon and not to Kain's carbon. And that rejection, that failure that Kain experienced, immediately brought him from a person who just, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with, to somebody that can spout this drivel. It's failure that creates the Yetzirah, that can do something that other, that the Yetzirah is normally incapable of. Normally the Yetzirah's derech is to slowly bring a person down. But if somebody experiences failure, the Yetzirah doesn't slowly bring him down, he immediately brings him down. Another example is Rus. The Medrash says that Orpah, after Rus departed, Rus with Naomi departed from her, it says that night she did terrible, terrible Averis. Unspeakable Averis. What happened to her? Says Reb Chaim that the rejection, the failure that she experienced that day when Rus left with Naomi and she did not, was enough to bring her down immediately. And he has more examples as well. Me'igra Ramo Labira Amikta, from a high point to a low point, immediately. That comes through failure. Failure as an experience is enough to bring somebody down. It's enough to bring down the biggest gibor. Failure begets more failure. When children experience failure, the experience of failure itself generates a nesoyin within them, generates a yetzahara within them, and it accelerates the process of deterioration. And we see it bechush. When a child refuses to try to get into a yeshiva, more often than not, the reason is because he tried and he failed a number of times. He failed once, maybe he got in and they threw him out. He failed again, maybe they refused to admit him. And he failed again, and now when he has an opportunity to do it, he doesn't even want to try. The failure, besides the fact that he doesn't want the pain of failure again, the fact that he failed, that he was rejected, that in and of itself is enough to lower him madrega and madrega and madrega. We spoke last week about an attitude that many people have when they encounter a problem with their children, to try anything that, or any approach or any person that offers a glimmer of hope. Maybe it's a local rabbi, maybe it's a yeshiva, a certain yeshiva, maybe it's a mahalach, maybe it's a trick that somebody's neighbor taught them in dealing with kids. The truth is, there's no such thing as it can't hurt. There's no such thing. Because if it's unsuccessful, then the child experiences failure in his attempt to solve a problem, and that failure itself is a problem. The failure itself hurts. We have to be very, very careful in how we try to solve our problems for our children. Because if we try and it doesn't work, of course if you try and it doesn't work, you try again. But there's no such thing as, well, let's try this, it can't hurt. It can hurt. If there's a failure, then the next time you try, it'll be much, much harder. Be very, very careful to whom you go, where you go, what you do to solve the problems that you may encounter with your children. Your child, first of all, probably possesses, he harbors a distrust for the system that we adults employ in our part of society. He distrusts what we have to offer him. Whatever reasons he was hurt, whatever pain he experienced, part of him distrusts the system. And when you promise him hope, or you give him a glimmer of hope, he's now testing the system. He's testing the system to see, okay, I don't really think it works. My parents say it works, let's see. And a failure teaches the child something. It teaches him that indeed the system does not work for him. It causes him to feel like a reject, not from a certain yeshiva, but a reject from the system. Problem children look at the relationship between themselves and, we'll call it, the establishment, which includes the yeshiva system, the system of parents, the system of adults, the rabbonim, as, well, enemies is too strong of a word, but adversaries. People on two ends, two players in a game, one wins, one loses. Two people on both ends of a rope in a tug of war. The child thinks that the system rejects him, it doesn't work for him, because if it would work for him, he wouldn't have problems in the first place. Something went wrong. And in the child's mind, maybe it's the parents that went wrong, maybe it's the yeshiva that went wrong, but some short circuit over here teaches him that although other children travel and sail smoothly through adolescence, it doesn't work this way with him. The system that's designed to take adolescence through that period of their life isn't working for him. And now you come to him and you tell him, no, the system is here to help you. The yeshiva, the rav, whatever the case may be. He's going to be skeptical. And he's going to be looking and looking for mistakes. He's going to be judging this with a fine-tooth comb. And if there's a failure, it's just going to confirm that part of his psyche, that part of him that believes that the system doesn't work for him. And the next time you need to find help, and you do find an opportunity for help, it's going to be so hard to get him to cooperate with that. He's going to be such a skeptic. Not to mention the fact that failure in and of itself, like Reb Chaim Shmulevitz taught us, is an asoyin that's so great that it can accelerate the normal process of corruption that the Yetzer Hara has to resort to under normal circumstances. If a child is a failure in yeshiva, he's a failure in the frum community, and I use the word failure very, very figuratively, because the child isn't a failure, but in his mind he feels he is. It's very, very important. It is imperative and of utmost necessity for him to experience success in some area of his life. If it's in learning, noch besser. If it's in Torah and mitzvahs, noch besser. That's wonderful. If in some area of Yiddishkeit, this child can see success, maybe he can be a big Baal Chesed, maybe this kid can, he's not good at Gemara, but he'll be very, very good at Chumash. He's not good in Lumdus, but he could be good at Bekiyas. Some kids have excellent memories if they really put their mind to it. There was a certain man, Adam Gadol, whose father, who was a bigger Adam Gadol, told him that if you try to learn in the regular ways that yeshivas learn, you're not going to really be successful. Learn differently. Learn Bekiyas. And the son grew up to be a big bucky, big bucky in Shas from the biggest in the world, maybe the biggest in the world. And maybe that's what has to be done. If that could be done, that's wonderful. But even if the child cannot, for whatever reason, or will not, experience success in Ruchnius, it's so important for him to know that he's capable of succeeding in something. In something. In a vocation. In a skill. A musical instrument. To learn how to paint. To take care of his goof, send him to the gym, and he should eat well, so he could be a gesunter muscle man. Some place, somehow he has to experience success. In order for him to realize that he's capable of being a success. Because unfortunately children and adults also look at themselves when they think of themselves in terms of successes or failures. We look at ourselves in terms of absolutes. We don't say, oh, I failed in this area, but I can try and I can be a success in another area. We say, I am a failure. We label ourselves. I am intrinsically a failure. I am an etzem loser. I am an intrinsic loser. Say, well, I just didn't succeed with this approach. That is usually too sophisticated a response for us to come up with. And so, you have to be able to point out to a child, see, you were successful in this. You could be successful in something else. Now, this is a phenomenon that you see all over. If you have a big company that makes motorcycles, and they're very successful in building and marketing motorcycles, suddenly you'll find that they decided to branch out from motorcycles and make electric pianos. And they think, well, if they were successful at this, maybe they'll be successful at that. And very often it doesn't work. But we have this way of thinking, this pattern of thought, that a success in one thing can be a success in something else. And here it works to our benefit. Because if a child sees that he can be a success in something, then you're one step closer to convincing him that he can be a success in Yiddishkeit. Because you taught him that he can be successful, period. I'll explain a little how this works. There are certain attitudes that are natural instincts. There are certain attitudes that are learned, that are only the result of education. I suppose the concept that if you go over to somebody and hit him in the head, he's not going to like you very much. You don't have to teach somebody that. That's instinct. The kid knows, just like if somebody hits him, he's not going to be happy about it. He's not going to say, oh, thank you for hitting me, here's a present. He knows the same thing is true in the reverse. But there are certain things that you have to teach children without which they'll never know. Certain values are intrinsic and instinctive, and certain values are obtained through learning. The concept that there is value to effort nowadays is not an instinctive concept that needs to be learned. That effort, that hard work brings results, that actions have consequences, that efforts have fruits, that is no longer, I don't know if it ever was, but today it's for sure not an instinctive concept. It has to be taught to kids. Kids need to learn the value of hard work. We live in a society where progress is synonymous with ease. If I make something easier to use, that's considered a more advanced product. Technology is directed is focused towards making things easier. If I make it easier to work a tape recorder, if I make it easier to drive the car, by pushing a button instead of turning a lever, or if I make it easier for you to read a clock, because instead of having hands, it has a digital readout, that's progress. Progress is considered synonymous, equivalent with ease. And therefore, the concept that work is a positive thing flies in the face of everything that a child grows up with in society. Society teaches a child that work is not a positive thing, it's a negative thing. If we could have very, very high technology, we would eliminate work. We try to eliminate work. We try to make life easier. The easier we make life, the better life is. Oh, this guy has such a great life. What does that mean? That means he doesn't have to work hard. The harder you have to work, the worse life you have. The easier it is for you. If you don't have to work hard, you have a better life. That's the way it works. more automatic product is, the item is, the more technologically advanced. So in such a atmosphere, in such an environment, we have to teach our children that hard work still retains value. This is why it's so hard to get kids to do things. Tell a kid that has a problem, have a kid, the Rebbe comes home, kid doesn't wake up in the morning, kid doesn't do good on tests, kid, study. Study hard, stay up late. Oh, but I'm so tired, oh, but it's hard. What do you mean it's hard? It's hard became a reason for inaction. If an action is difficult, if an action needs effort, nowadays it becomes, that becomes a reason, a motivation, a reason not to do it. That shouldn't be so. The proper glatta attitude is that it's hard, but it's worth it, because it will bring fruits. Everybody's looking for an easy way. Well, I want to get a high school diploma without working very hard. I want to be a Bucky Bashas without opening a Gemara. Listen to Torah tapes in the car 2,000 and so times, and then I'll be a Bucky Bashas. I want to become a Lamdan without really, really working hard. So I'm going to listen to these shiurim that teach me the lamdas of various different sugyas, and I'll be a big Lamdan. And children are the same way as we are. They want to get the high school diploma without working hard. They want to progress in life without putting in a tremendous amount of effort. And we have to teach them that it's not so. The way to do it is find some area that the child is willing to put an effort into his work. To set, it doesn't matter if it's music lessons, if it's art lessons, if it's construction, bodybuilding, whatever it is. We need some area where the child can learn that the harder you work, the more effort you put in, the more reward you're going to get. The more work you put in, the more fruits you're going to end up with. That's a lesson that a kid has to learn nowadays. It's not, it's a simple piece of logic, lafum tzara agra, right? If you sit and do nothing, you're not going to get anything. And if you get up off your back and you go do something, so maybe you'll accomplish something, right? That sounds very logical and very simple. Even a 2-year-old can figure it out. No more. It's a mistake. A 2-year-old cannot figure that out. Not a 2-year-old, not a 12-year-old, not a 20-year-old. Not a 40, unless we're taught. You have to teach children that you get up, you do stuff, and because of the work you put in, you're able to reap reward. Hazayrim bedima, berina yiktsayru. Whatever you do with tears, you're going to reap with joy. And the way to teach that to a child is to find some area where he's willing to work, where he's willing to cry, he's willing to put in an effort. And when he sees success in that area, he's going to learn that generic, that general lesson. He's going to say, whoa, my efforts brought results. So maybe I can apply that formula elsewhere. Maybe I can apply that formula to my education. Maybe I can apply that formula to my neshama. Maybe I can apply that formula to my family life. Maybe I can even apply that formula to get rid of my addiction. It takes effort. I'm dealing with a 17-year-old girl. Like tomorrow she'll be 18. So I don't know if it's Tzeis HaKechovim or Shkia, when exactly is her birthday, but she's going to be 18 tomorrow. Was in Beis Yaakov in elementary school. She is now a heroin addict. Full-fledged heroin addict. Her mother doesn't know a thing. Well, her mother does know a thing. Her mother knows there's a problem, but her mother has no musug, has no clue that her daughter is a heroin addict. She thinks maybe her daughter's depressed, maybe her daughter's going through bad times, which is true. She has no idea what's happening. And you go to the girl, brought her to a big shot addiction place in Long Island, where they get people off from people. And they told her what she has to do to break this addiction. You know what her attitude is? I don't want to go to meetings. I don't want... Just give me medicine that's going to take this addiction away from me. Just give me the just give me a pill. I don't want to have to go to meetings. I don't want to have to put in this effort. I don't want to have... It's hard. I don't want to do this. Now this girl's in pain. She wakes up every morning, physical pain. She's come to the point where she knows her life is a mess. It's a shambles. She's useless to herself because of this. But to put an effort in seems like a waste. Work is a waste of time. If you can't get immediate gratification, then you're just fooling yourself by putting in an effort. Because nowadays, gratification, success, results come immediately. They come with a snap of a finger. They come with a press of a button. They come with the swallowing of a pill. It comes with a turning of a knob. It comes with a dialing on the telephone and ordering something through a credit card. You don't have to write anything. You don't have to do anything. Gratification results. Fruits come immediately. Now come automatically. No more manual fruits. Everything is automatic. Nothing manual. And if something needs to be done manually and not automatically, there's something wrong. Who are you trying to fool? She says, what are these people really going to do for me? She says. She's suspicious of people that tell her that she needs to put in an effort. An effort? But who are these people trying to fool? I have to work on something. Well, these people, you know, doesn't stim over. Something just doesn't smell right about this. You tell me I have to work hard, something's wrong over here. That's why it's imperative for us to teach our children that hard efforts bring results. Nobody's perfect. Everybody does Averis. We shouldn't think much about our Averis. And although it says in the Pasuk, Hatasi Lenegdi Samid, my sins are constantly in front of me. In the Satmar Rebbe's Perush on Tehillim, he brings on that Pasuk, in the name of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, that constantly, the word Tamid, in that context, doesn't mean constantly. It means forever, but occasionally. Like the carbon tumid. Every once in a while, you should think about your affairs. Maybe on Yom Kippur, maybe on Yom Kippur Katan, whatever the case may be. There are designated times for us to think about our affairs. Maybe we can designate some of our own. And we should never stop using those designated times. But generally speaking, we shouldn't be thinking about our Averis because it brings to atzvus, it brings to depression, it brings to sadness, it brings to yerida. We can go from the highest point to the lowest point because of our failures. And the way is just forget about them. Forget about them. Focus your eyes on the future. Forget about the past. On Yom Kippur you'll remember the past. On Erev Rosh Chodesh you'll remember the past. Forget about that. Forget it. Don't think about it. In the back of your mind, you know it's there, but don't focus your attention on it. Focus your attention on the future, on your success. It's so important for people to experience success and not to experience failure. And if they do experience it, to minimize the impact of that experience as much as possible. Yes, learn from it. Yes, don't... If you did an Avera once, if you were Nichshel once, you have to be careful again. And the second time, it's even more of an Avera. Like it says by the Meraglim, that because they didn't learn from Miriam, so they're called Rishoyim. These Rishoyim, so from Miriam, what happened to her because of Lashon Hara, and they didn't learn anything. So you see from there that not only are you responsible for your Aver, but if you should have learned from experience, here it's even somebody else's experience, then it's an added responsibility. And that's of course true. But on the other hand, it's important for us not to dwell on our failures, even if we experience them. The best thing is not to fail. And it's within the hands of parents to a large extent to make sure, as much as possible, that children do not fail. Yeah, they need to fall when they ride a bike, experience a hin, a her, but failure in Ruchnius is a big sakona. It's an asoyin. And it's up to us to make sure our children, as much as possible, don't have... If they do, we have to teach them how to deal with it. It's not the end of the world. Sheva yipel tzaddik v'kam. A tzaddik falls 7 times and then gets up, but that doesn't mean we should stick our foot out in front of our kids and let them fall. We have to try to make them walk straight, and if they fall, then we deal with it that way. It's so important for us to focus on success and not failure, and to try to make sure our children are successful some way, and they learn that by putting in an effort, they can be successful, because if they're going to be successful, the only effort, the bottom line, the only effort that's going to make them successful is their own. And they have to learn how to use it. At this point, we're going to be taking questions from the audience. This question is from the ladies. What do we do if a school labels a child and instead of focusing on a child's few successes, instead focuses on their failures and thereby labels a child and causes them to live up to these expectations, thereby causing a vicious cycle? Find another yeshiva. And I have to tell you that although it's very important for children to respect their yeshiva, to respect their rebbeim, under certain circumstances, this is one of them, generally speaking, where I believe it's a parent's responsibility to explain to the child that the yeshiva made a terrible, terrible mistake in their attitude, and they are not intrinsic failures. The child is not a loser. The child is not a nobody. The child is not a failure. Rather, the child can be a success. See, how many times can you pull it off? That's what we said beforehand, that we have to try to minimize the necessity of our having to pull that off. Before we find a yeshiva for our children, we have to try to make sure as much as possible that it's the type of yeshiva that won't do this. That's how we started off this evening. Because, as I said, if they experience failure, the second time it's going to be harder, and the third time it's going to be even harder. A failure is itself a big nisayon. And a yeshiva like this, when you search for a yeshiva for your children, this is not the yeshiva to send them to. If you have a child that's a machine, and that's constantly a success, then obviously the way, if a yeshiva treats failures, it doesn't know how to treat failures the proper way, you don't have much of a concern. But if a child is likely, or even possible, that he should need proper treatment in case of failure, then he doesn't belong in this yeshiva. Don't send him there. The attitude shouldn't be, well, it's a yeshiva, it's a yeshiva. A failure in a yeshiva is, well, it brings a child a terrible, terrible nisayon. It shouldn't go to that yeshiva in the first place. People put in more effort to buying a car. They put in more investigation in buying a car than they do in finding a yeshiva for their children. Who in their right minds would buy a used car before bringing it to a mechanic? And maybe even two mechanics. And asking, is this okay and is that okay? When you buy a house, you scrutinize it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that this is working and that's working. And in the contract, you ever see a real estate contract? This has to work and that has to work. And if this doesn't, and if it's this, so the sale is void and this. And when it comes to yeshiva for our children, well, yes, the kid will only have to take one bus over there and three buses over there. So, you know, we'll send them over here. We have to put effort into finding the proper yeshiva for our children. We have to put a very, very big effort. We are entrusting our children's neshamas to these institutions. And I'm sure this yeshiva that you described on this note is good for other types of kids. I hope. But to find a yeshiva that's good for your particular child often needs much effort and much work on your part. And you're right, you can't pull this off all that often, and that's why we have to make sure that we won't be put into a situation where we will need to pull this off. Thank you for coming. Have a good night.